Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History Number 2. Selma Berkman and Estelle Kruman are interviewing Leon Arcus on December 11th, 1978. Tape 2, Side 3.
And Chapter 3. Let's see, where did we end last time?
We were talking about the gallery.
At any rate, I decided at one point that I ought to get out of this. This was 1952, and I was contemplating opening a real art gallery at that point, when I had a visitor.
What do you mean by a real art gallery?
Well, one that would handle paintings and original prints. I had a visitor, and the visitor was Gordon Washburn, asking whether I would care to come out here to Pittsburgh as his assistant director. And might interest you to know that one of the things he said was he had asked Stephen Bourgeois, who was still gone, whether there'd be any problems, if Stephen felt there'd be any problem because I was Jewish. And Stephen said, "That's ridiculous," he said. "No one in the field of art has any religious base," which is true. Because if you ever look at all of the dealers, 99.9% of them are Jewish. And for that matter, look what's happened to the whole field of art. There is no religious base there at all. He says people are without religion.
What's surprising to me is that
someone without
any formal training, I wanted to know whether Gordon Washburn had any formal education in the field of art.
Oh, yes. He went to the FOG. He was a graduate of Williams, majoring in art. Oh, surely. He was a very, very involved art historian. Anyway, my father died at that point. And so while I was due to come out to Pittsburgh in February 1st, I came out in I did come out here, and I started as assistant director under Washburn. We worked very well together. I must say it was a most enjoyable operation. I have a great regard for Gordon, although frankly the growth in it, of this museum was negligible at that time. And I will at this moment interject a comment, which I think is worthwhile putting into anything of this nature. That I found in Pittsburgh one of the few communities anywhere in the entire United States with a large Jewish population that has given over virtually nothing to the field of arts. Virtually all the other cities, the cultural activities are in the hands of the Jewish community. Pittsburgh, not so. I think I'm right. It's an amazing sort of contradiction.
Is it still that way?
I still feel that way. Gradually, little by little, we're getting people into it. There are no collectors that were Jews, except Charlie Rosenblum. There were very few people really interested. In other cities, take New York City and realize where would the Metropolitan, the Opera House, Museum, or Symphony, Philharmonic, where would they be without Jewish support? No one. I think this was quite intentional here, on the other hand, to keep Jews out. Certainly out of Carnegie Institute.
Originally.
Oh yes, when you had a man like Avinoff here, who was so flagrantly anti-Semitic. He was the director of the Natural History Museum. This is before my times, but I've heard about it. As a matter of fact, I had quite a bit of this on my own here. and we'll come to that story. To say the least, the real problem, and this is one of the reasons I'm requesting that this history not be released, is because there are certain things I'm saying about what I'm going to speak about now. People are alive, and it would be very devastating, because Gordon Washburn went to New York, to Asia House, and I was asked if I would be interested, and I wasn't at that time, in becoming director. The reason I wasn't, I was married at that point to a woman who was in and out of institutions, and I had too many personal problems of my own to be concerned with a museum. But I will say this much, that the next man made director was Gustav von Groschwitz, a man who had practically no experience. He was a relative of Mr. Roy Arthur Hunt, at that time chairman of my board. A man who was a very nice chap, a very honest, decent, very sweet man. A man who knew who had no knowledge of art, who presumably taught it, but I later discovered what he taught was mechanical drawing. A man who locked himself into his office so he wouldn't have to talk art. This was a rather difficult, quite a blow. And the first incident came when, at that point, Mrs. Scaife was interested in giving things. And the first case was, I had started the whole Scaife purchase program by buying three pictures, and I was asked not to write them up so von Groschwitz could write them up and thereby get credit for them. How stupid. As though this was significant. They were the great Degas, Monet, what did I buy? Degas, Renoir, and a Fouillard were the immediate purchases. And at any rate, in short order, I think everybody became very aware that they had quite a lemon in Mr. von Groschwitz. Now, Von, again, I want to explain, was a decent human being. He should never have been put into this position. I feel as though they made him what he was, and it was not the responsibility of the man. They coerced him into a lot of things. And I think the Hunt family had quite a bit to do with this. What next happened was there was quite an uproar here, and it was and at one point, Steve Osterweis, who was our second token Jew on our board, came to me and said, Leon, there is a group forming with Jack Hines and others. Would you, if they got rid of Groschwitz, take on the direction of the museum? And I said, Steve, I will, but I'm going to tell you we will not get a new director, because by saying I will, that means there will be no, they will not fire a bomb because they won't get rid of, they don't want a Jew as director. And that's exactly what took place. At that moment, I was about ready to leave Pittsburgh when I decided the hell with it, this was going to be a thing I was going to fight out, because they could never get rid of Von without asking me. And I was going to embarrass him. And this, I must say, was quite a treacherous little thing. James Bouvard, then president of Carnegie Institute, was, strange enough, a man who has always been very kind, very decent, has done everything possible to make my life here good. But on the other hand, was so rabidly anti-Semitic that he couldn't permit this situation to happen. He and my former chairman of the board, James Beale. What happened, at any rate, excuse me, would you?
When Gordon Washburn left to go to Asia House and you turned down the directorship of Carnegie Institute, what did you do at that time?
I was assistant director, but what they did was they kept me on as associate director. They upped me, and they were very delighted that I didn't take the job.
And how long was
von Groschwitz here? Let's see, he came around, I don't know why, 64, I would think, and that'd be about 4 years. Forgive me if I'm off a year
just
or two.
Just a general idea, you were the associate director under him.
That's right.
All right, then.
Actually, I ran the museum totally. There was no...
did not face the public or do any of that sort.
And, actually, what happened at one point was Bavard and Beale called me in there, his office, Bavard's office, and they propositioned me that in view of the fact that they had no faith in von Groschwitz's buying policy, would I find things for them to buy? See, it was a terrible thing. We had a patroness for the first time since the beginning of in 1896. For the first time, we had somebody who was willing to put up money. And the question is whether I would buy and tell them what it was that I wanted, and they would say they found it and get Bond to accept it. And I asked a very simple question which killed the whole thing, which was, if they were asking me to be so disloyal to the head of the museum, did they expect the same disloyalty from me in regard to them? See, one was after all chairman of my board, and the other was president of the whole institute. And that stopped the entire nonsense. But I must say, these were really rough times. What was important to me was that I put so much of myself into this whole institution, to the whole operation of getting it going, building up collections locally, all of this, and to see somebody who, when offered 12 bonas, said anyone would be all right. After all, if you had 12 children, would one be a favorite? How nonsensical. And so Mrs. Gate bought the worst one. And I then said, I quit, unless we get the best one. We did get the best one. But I mean, this has reached a point, we got two of them. And it's many years later, we finally got rid of that one that Vaughn had bought. But it gives you an idea of how awful this whole situation was. One moment, I didn't want to be disloyal. At the same time, I'm concerned about the museum proper. Well, this went on until Jim Walton was made president. And upon Walton's ascendancy, the first thing he did was fire Vaughn, offered me the job, and he did. By the way, I'm very proud of this. It preceded the entrance of any Jews into the Duquesne Club, of which I'm a member. And the only reason I'm a member is just to be one more, because I never go there at all.
Was there any conflicts or anything because of your appointment?
No, never has been. Oh, sure, I recognize certain anti-Semitism among certain members of the Women's Committee and stuff like that. It doesn't mean anything to me. That's their... If it makes them unhappy, I'm glad. That's all. But certain people in the community, like Heinz and others, have not been anti-Semitic, which is sort of interesting. Since then... But this is amazing in light of all that's transpired. To say the least, what's happened here is that in the 24 years I've been here, I can certainly point to certain achievements. This building is really of my development. I don't have to say anything more. The architect was, thank heavens, a good one. I fought and got rid of a bad one named Charles Luckman. Fought for 3 years, and I think we've gone ahead to become a rather prominent museum. I remember the days when we had only one painting of any value, and that was called The Old King by Rouault. Today, I think that's sort of submerged in the stuff that's taken its place. And I think that we're going ahead, we're becoming a prominent museum. We've taken our place with the major museums of this country.
If you had anything to do, would you do something differently than you've done it before? Or? approach someone differently, or?
Oh, it's just that it's plugging away and it's coming up. It's trying to inject excitement. All the programs here that have happened in the last few years, I think, have been exciting. We have probably have the best educational program going in any museum in this country right now. Our collection is astoundingly good. You haven't any idea how good we are until you go to New York and speak to a dealer. Ask any dealer in New York, what do you think of the Carnegie? And you're going to get a very, very revealing sort of review. And the reason I say that is they have no axe to grind. They're not in the competitive sort of field. Wildersteins came out and said that the work done here was the outstanding work done of this century. I think, if I may say so, it is sort of incredible that any museum would advance this far at this late day and age when paintings are literally in the middle of something.
As we're talking about your museum achievements, which are great, did you find yourself involved in the community other than in the museum field?
When I married Jane, I suddenly found myself involved in the Jewish community. I don't know why she's asked me this question. It's rather interesting. I don't know why had I never gotten into the Jewish community prior to this. Well, frankly, I think my entire life has been oriented along different lines. I've never belonged to clubs. I'm not interested in social events. I'm not interested in, I don't play cards. I don't do a lot of things. I'm not interested in gala dances, this sort of thing. No, my life's been entirely different.
What do you consider when you relax? What do you do? What do you like to do besides this?
Listen to music or read or talk. I'm not trying to run away to the Concordia. You see, it's not my sort of thing. I'm not concerned with the social world. I've never been concerned with it either, with the Christian or the Jewish faith. To me, it's a sort of ridiculous state. And what makes me feel so good is when I read in things by Singer and others that the highest idea of a man who had a man of great wealth who had a daughter was to marry her to the poorest guy who was a scholar. Now that to me makes sense. But why has everybody forgotten that?
Well, besides,
I think we've forgotten a lot of things. I think perhaps in my own strange way, I'm coming to a greater truth on this than the tendency among Jews today, and that is to follow the American tradition. Bourgeois condition of existence.
Well, then you would say, we have a question here. How do you view Pittsburgh's Jewish life and its place in the general community now? Does this fit in with what you've been saying?
Well, I have no right to do this because I don't think I know that much about the entire Jewish community here. I'm amazed every once in a while to run into people who have great depth and who are concerned about things. I discover things about certain people. You run into Jerry Greenwald. It's funny I speak about him. He's just recovering. But Jerry, sort of fellow who goes off on his own New York to see photographs. He's interested in the whole field of photography. He's an incredibly well-read man. You know, he's not emulating what we call the good life here among the Gentiles. I think we have our own little features.
Who do you consider some of your best friends?
Locally in Pittsburgh?
Or at any?
I don't.
The Stephen Bourgeois that you mentioned.
Well, Stephen Bourgeois is a mentor, not a friend.
Yes, but I mean
he's dead. It's very funny. With time, I don't have best friends like I had when I was growing up. The little coterie of three or four people that one always sees. That's sort of gone. Since I've left New York, that's left. And I don't have anything like that. I see a number of people.
to see a guy like Ray Goldblum, you know, become a good friend. But best friends, that sort of thing, no. I think that my wife's my best friend.
That's good, yeah. Can you tell us, about the paintings in this room?
Well, that over there is nothing.
All right.
That's just a Japanese bit of Baroque nonsense. The work back of my, it's rather interesting. It's by a black artist who came from Pittsburgh. And Bill Block gave us that. And I find it very good work. The work over there is...
What was the artist's name?
I'm just trying to think of it. It's funny. Well, you know what's happened to me? I can remember names of some of my school teachers, but if I'm trying to remember people who were living with me today, I don't have this one. And it's got to be very, very embarrassing. The work over there is by Carl Henning Petersen, a Danish artist, who I sort of brought out. Incidentally, for your information.
I want your information on your 90.
Yes. Oh, well, you know, I've left out tons of all. I left out all my honors.
I don't want you to leave that.
I don't.
We want that.
Well, I don't remember them all.
Tell me about the knighting.
Well, I have been knighted by the Queen of Denmark. And they gave me a medal. It's called the Dannebrog, the Order of the Dannebrog, D-A, how do you spell it? D-A-N-N-E-B-R-A-G. It means the Danish flag. It's the oldest order extant. Goes back to the 13th century. And to my shock, it was also a knighthood.
And now,
when I was given it, I discovered the last time it was awarded in America was to Niels Bohr, and that absolutely shook me to the core. The reason, because I've done a lot of work with Denmark. In Denmark, outside of, I've brought many of their artists to the attention of the rest of the world. I've been rather interested. I happen to love Denmark. It's a beautiful country. I love the people.
And how did you get acquainted with that country?
Heaven knows. You wouldn't just walk into situations like
that. On a vacation?
No. Oh, well, I knew a chap there named... Dr. Erik Andreasen, who I met here through David Thompson. Erik is a doctor, anatomist, teaches, by the way. He's quite brilliant in his own field. In fact, very important. But Erik had a love of art. And through him, when I became interested in Petersen, I learned he was a close friend. We corresponded, we met through Dave, and eventually I kept going to Copenhagen and the whole meeting many of the Danish artists and so forth. And that all opened up. One day I got this award. By the way, I'm in Who's Who in America, Who's Who in the World, Who's Who in the East, I don't know. And I think there are probably a lot of things in there. In addition to the Duquesne Club, I'm also a member of the Century Club, the Century Association in New York, which is not the Jewish club there. There is one. Rather, it's one of the oldest clubs in America. It's quite an interesting place. It's fascinating. All you have to do... Hold on. Not part of it. I'm just giving an idea. But this does have meaning. Belong to Century does, because it is, in a peculiar way, an acknowledgement of what you've done. Accomplishments, yes.
Will you invite me to join
that? I've been
that?
Given all sorts of honorary things by the AIA, the American Institute of Architects, and so forth. I don't even remember half of what they are. And they're not they're only important in that... They make you feel good, that's about it.
Now, what do you envision in the future here as your job? And another question I wanted to ask you, mentioned a five-year limit on this.
5-year limit.
Retiring.
5 years, I'll be retired.
I see.
I would prefer that any statement made about anybody alive would not be published at all. Leave that right on the tape. I think it's fair to say that. I think it's a terrible thing to do. I did it because I feel if you want a true transcript of what happened.
Historically, right.
Yeah. I could go on. I could fill in all of the little chinks here. There's so much stuff that...
What do you want to do when you retire? How would you like to spend the rest of your life when you're not director of Carnegie?
Once I'm out of here? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I can't leave art. On the other hand, I don't know.
Are you a book writer?
I may write. I have written a book, you know. It's published. On John Cain.
I haven't.
And it's strangely enough, not as good as a catalog I once wrote on John Cain. By the way, I've just written another thing on Cain, which is being published, coming out in part of a catalog for the Whitney Museum. And so on I've done a lot of writing. I've done a lot of talking. Going out, I have two jobs adjuring very shortly out of town. One in Marietta and the other way out in Indiana, somewhere in Muncie, Indiana, and so forth. But this is constant.
Have you any other information you personally feel should be in these last few minutes?
I probably have much to add, but that will always be tomorrow. One never thinks of what to say at the moment. It's like John Cain spoke about painting a picture. He said, the outline's there, but it's the filling in that takes the time. And I think this is it. There are 1,001 stories about the museum that would be of great interest to you. There are thousands of stories about what happened in all parts of my life. I don't know. Thank God I had a full one and a busy one, and that's all is the most important thing to me. I don't think I ever just sat during any part of my life.
Well, thank you.
Thanks so much.
We feel that you've given us an insight not only into the museum, but into the war and art in its early days. Do you feel that contrasting Pittsburgh today with yesterday, has there been improvement in the art world? No, won't go into that.